But I mean, it never really, at the moment, I think he was a little bit taken back. But then he composed the Arrowhead Trio, composed that trio. And I think the idea came from a person that we had met at that time, a violist by the name of Blumberg, who had formed that group and told Eric about it and wanted him to compose something
for
this kind of combination. And so he did.
So he chose a combination of flute, viola, and harp, which was the same combination Debussy had used years before, but Eric works in a much different fashion.
Yeah, and I know that the harp was very angry at the rehearsal. She was constantly in a very bad mood because she was used to this Debussy, you know, arpeggios, and Eric treated it, the harp, more like a cembalo, I think, you know? And she said, it's very awkward, and she was very unhappy. But it sounded beautiful. And there was a concert of the Society of American Composers, at the Los Angeles chapter, the California chapter, at which it was premiered.
I see. And this is much more concise than any chamber work he'd written to this point. Did he ever talk about feeling that he, personally, that he was going in a new direction? Did he ever talk about this?
No, he really, no. What I was very surprised about was that he wrote that piano, that string trio, this trio, while we were there in the summer, and the sunshine, and everything was in bloom, and the lake was so blue, and the piece has throughout, from beginning to end, a very late autumnal color to it, and almost wintry, I would say.
Very spare and direct.
Yeah, and so it came from somewhere else than his environment.
How in general, did you return to Arrowhead then in the summers that were left, or?
No, because the last two summers we were invited to the Huntington-Hartford Foundation, and so we did not go to Lake Arrowhead. But up to that point we had gone every year, not for so long, I mean the last 4 years. First we went to Brandeis, and then we began to go into Arrowhead
the summer. Well, this whole business of Arrowhead brings up a broader question. We've talked about Eric's compositional habits as best as we could reconstruct them in Europe, and we found there that there wasn't a great deal we could say except how neatly he kept his workroom, and he did that all his life. Did he have a favorite place to compose in Los Angeles, or was he...
Well, that presented great difficulties in the beginning, because we were in a little house that... had everything on the wrong place, and it was really very difficult to live there. And especially Eric had no workroom, and he needed a workroom to compose, and didn't compose until he had that workroom. Now, off the bedroom was like a little ante room, you know, where the you know closets were, and. This was divided from the bedroom by a kind of open doorway. And that this doorway was open, and of course I had to go to my bedroom and have my things there and everything. That was enough for him that he could not compose, and he claimed that he could not compose in the living room. Next to the living room was the kitchen, and I was again busy there. Barbara was still a little very small and had to have lunches fixed and, you know. The bustling of the family life went there on, so that was impossible. And only when we a friend visited who understood these things and said that there was a possibility to make a door and it wouldn't cost too much, because you know, cost was always a forbidding factor. And so we had this door made, and I think it cost something like $30, which at that time was very, very much for us. And from then on, he had a room to compose.
I see.
And when we then left this house after we had been there for 17 years, and then we stayed at a bigger house, at Miller Drive. Mm-hmm. And he had a small room, but his own room, which was off the hall and off the living room. Mm-hmm.